this with me.
This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 25th of November, 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 25th of November. This week, our editors were Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. The main headlines this week are car crime soaring, city starts to turn all colourful, prisoners are not supported. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley?
Car crime soaring. Thefts from cars in Winchester have rocketed. New police figures revealed to the Chronicle show that compared to the same two-month period last year, there has been a 1.125% increase from 4 to 49. Thieves have raided cars in various parts of Winchester. However, police will not reveal what they think is behind the surge. One taxi driver in Winchester had a Help for Heroes bucket, along with other items stolen from her vehicle. Barbara Raymond, 50, of Wavell Way, Stanmore, said the theft of the bucket shocked her, as she fears the culprits could now pose as charity collectors. CCTV footage showed the two thieves in the act when they carried out the raid on her car in the early hours. She said, one tried to crowbar the door open, then they broke the glass and got in while another kept a lookout. They took everything out of the side pocket and completely ransacked the car. The theft meant that she was not able to drive to her terminally ill father. She added, I do not know how I held it together. That Tuesday, when I went to walk the dog, I looked at the car and noticed the windows had been smashed in and spotted that they stole the charity bucket. They do not know what they are doing to people. They're just after a quick buck. They should get a job. Self-employed Hackney taxi driver John Boardman, 55, had his car targeted when parked at Fairdown Close 2 weeks ago. Thieves stole money after smashing a window, and now he says he's taken extra security measures. Mr. Boardman said, it is a shock. I left some money in the car as I was waiting for a call for another job when it happened. He said police dealt with the incident quickly, and his car is back on the road. But he said other taxi drivers in Stanmore and Oliver's Battery have also been hit. This is the first time it has happened for them to do it near my house. I think there is definitely a gang going round doing it. It seems very well organised. Residents have taken to Facebook to voice their frustration. One person whose husband's car was targeted wrote, my hubby is a cab driver, and ours was broken into 2 weeks ago. It cost us so much money, no insurance claim because of the excess, and no work for days. The repair to the window alone was £1,270. These people need to be caught. The police need to be out at night, patrolling the streets. Police say the thefts could be the work of just one person and are keeping an open mind and are proactively policing the affected areas. They say they will also be carrying out undercover operations, reviewing CCTV footage and carrying out house-to-house inquiries. Sergeant Matt Fancett of Winchester Police said, we have seen a large increase in the number of thefts from vehicles in the Winchester area. In the last 2 months, 49 thefts have been reported to us, compared to only 4 in the same period last year. At present, we're seeing the majority of incidents happening in the Stanmore, Badger Farm, St. Cross, and Oliver's Battery areas, as well as a number in the week and hair stock. Most are overnight, with insecure vehicles being targeted. We are committed to finding those responsible.
And let's have the second, and I believe very seasonal, headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, city starts to turn all colourful. Winchester has begun the countdown to Christmas by turning its ancient streets into a blaze of colour. Thousands of people gathered in the centre of Winchester last Thursday to watch the city's spectacular Christmas lights display burst into life. The narrow pedestrianised streets filled with an ever-increasing number of visitors as the big switch-on grew nearer. Entertainment included a feast of live music, with a temporary stage erected outside the floodlit Guildhall and a huge screen giving spectators a close-up view of each performer. Topping the bill were Ward Thomas, a country music duo formed by 22-year-old twins Catherine and Lizzie Ward Thomas from Petersfield. Earlier this year, they made history with Cartwheels, which reached number one in the UK album charts, making them the first ever UK country act to achieve that feat. Other celebrities helping the city to go Christmas crazy included Santa himself, whose appearance was arranged by the Winchester Round Table. The famous red-suited figure climbed onto the stage to help the mayor, Councillor Jane Rutter, switch on the lights, helped by Dylan Crop Morris, 13, a Year 9 pupil at Westgate Secondary School. They were joined by the Ugly Sisters from Cinderella, this year's pantomime at the city's Theatre Royal. Winchester is also celebrating the return of its German-style Christmas market at the ice rink at the cathedral. To help cope with the crowds, the city has undergone a car parking shake-up. As part of the new scheme, a car park counter will show the number of spaces available in certain car parks around the city. Other new initiatives include extending bus times for park and ride car parks to 8:30 p.m, an hour later. Traffic marshals funded by the bid will be on duty at the Brooks Shopping Centre car park and King Alfred statue, providing information and parking directions to incoming vehicles. And appropriately with this story, there are lots of colourful pictures. There's a picture of Santa, who can't be recognised because he's got a big white beard and big white wig, with three little children all smiling and one child in a pushchair. And then there's a picture of that Dylan Crop Morris, 13, of the Westgate School, who turned the lights on with Santa and with Jez Clark. And then there's a picture of the Ugly Sisters from Cinderella in the Brooks Centre, looking really colourful, one in bright green and blue and the other in mauve red, and both of them with wigs and lots of makeup, as is appropriate. And then there's the Guildhall all shining, looks purple in the floodlit thing. And then one final picture of six very attractive young women all standing in big coats, smiling, and they've got woolly hats on, and they're all laughing happily.
And let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And the third headline story is Prisoners Are Not Supported. Winchester Prison has made progress despite the deaths of five inmates last year. Inspectors visited the jail and said it is improving, but it still has major challenges and inmates at risk of self-harm are not being supported enough. The prison's leadership has been under fire over the past 2 years following the deaths of five inmates in 2015, and sources from within the jail saying that morale among staff had reached rock bottom. Inspectors said the jail had issues with violence and the spread of drugs known as legal highs. The prison has been recognised by the government as one that needs additional staff and resources and is set to share in £14 million of government money to bring in new ways of working. The inspection comes as up to 10,000 prison officers in England have stopped work over a surge in violence in jails, threatening the safety of staff and inmates. The inquest into the death of Father's Rights campaigner Hayden Burton, who was found hanging in his cell, revealed that staff could have done more to prevent his death by making more welfare checks. This inspection revealed that over the past 6 months, there had been 209 recorded incidents of self-harm, which is far higher than at similar jails. The hard-hitting report also stated that there was no strategy to manage self-harm or address issues leading to periods of crisis. The inspection also showed there was little evidence to suggest staff had meaningful interactions with prisoners on a care plan. A major concern was that prisoners only had 45 minutes out of their cell. They also called for segregation unit to be replaced as it is bleak and oppressive. Worryingly, 40% of inmates said they had been victimised by staff, and 56% said they had felt unsafe at the jail, while 40% say it is easy to get hold of drugs inside the jail. Compared to the critical inspection in 2014, inspectors were pleased to find the jail is doing much better, with activity and resettlement much improved. However, they say there are still big challenges to overcome in terms of safety of inmates.
And that concludes the headline stories. We're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, first person, editorial comment, what's on, and general news. I'll start with the death notices. Atterton, Wendy Ann née Edwalis Atterton, at home in Alsford, aged 85 after a long illness. Bell, David Leslie Bell, peacefully. Bing, Thomas Edmund Earl of Strafford Bing, very peacefully at home with his family at Easton. Croft, Winifred Rosina Wynne Croft, who was a resident of Wick for 62 years, aged 92. Harris, John Duncan Harris, peacefully. Houghton, Peter James Houghton, peacefully, aged 79. Irons, Stella Gwendolyn Irons, peacefully, aged 88. Morant, Frank Morant, suddenly. Roberts, Audrey Roberts, late of Orchard Walk, Week, and peacefully at Stowlangtoft Hall Nursing Home in Suffolk. Shipway, David Shipway, aged 77. Taylor, Barbara Taylor. And finally, Willamette, Nicholas John Willamette, peacefully aged 66 after a short illness. And now we have Christian comment read by Shirley.
Right. And this is written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy, headed Finding Meaning in the Waiting. Advent starts on Sunday. It's the time when we expectantly look forward to Jesus coming, both historically in our Christmas celebration and in the future as the culmination of our lives. Advent brings with it uncertainty. How are we called to live our lives in response to the ever-present and future coming of Jesus? It's the challenge and comfort of God involved in the mess and beauty, joy and pain of human life. The uncertainty of the season seems to mirror our contemporary uncertainty as we contemplate the outworkings of Brexit, the nature of a Trump presidency, or the outcome of various European elections. How does our national and international situation reflect the kingdom for which Jesus prayed? We often associate candles or chocolate countdown calendars with Advent, but a modern Advent image might be the painting by Banksy of a beggar saying, "Keep your coins, I want your change." Advent should be a time when we are lured, like a moth to a flame, to different ways of seeing things, of doing things, and of being. In his poem, Kneeling, the priest-poet R.S. Thomas guides us to the need to take time out, as the meaning is in the waiting. But this waiting is meant to drive us forward to a different psychological and spiritual place. The emphasis on waiting and changing comes from the Christian understanding that God is love. Any loving relationship is built upon time together and willingness to change, not to grow apart, but to be drawn ever closer in a dialogue of thought and embrace of the lover. Loving relationships are expectant of the rich potential of exploring together. Are unfulfilled as there always remain the possibility to go deeper and are a work in progress as our experiences both together and apart add new dimensions to our relationship. All of this is true of our relationship with God, the source of love, as we acknowledge the imperfections of the present in the light of the source of that all is good and true. The philosopher John Caputo says, "The advent of the God of love traumatizes our narcissism. Narcissism is ever present in our consumer and advertising-driven culture. Society proclaims that it's essential to consider ourselves worthy of all the latest gadgets and trendy clothes. In contrast, Advent is about eternal values and experiences. Traditional themes for the Sundays of Advent include death, judgment, heaven and hell. Probably not much of a draw in the Christmas shopping, but key to reflect upon if we hope to model and live eternal values. We also see communal and country narcissism in the desire to put various countries above others and to damn the consequences. The kingdom for which Jesus prayed had eternal values to be applied universally. In this kingdom, walls are to be replaced with bridges, and fear is to be replaced by love. Our neighbor is understood universally, and God's image is found in those, not in our own image." And this was written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy, Rector of East Winchester and priest in charge at St. Cross and Area Dean of Winchester.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And the written address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 15 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, the first one just says, "Thanks for help. Sir, I want to say thank you to the lovely couple who rushed to help me up off the pavement in Hyde Street recently. I hope they will read this and recognise themselves. In the circumstances, a friendly hand was very reassuring, and I am grateful." And the name and address is supplied.
And the second letter is from Christopher Gillam and is headed Rhodes Challenge. "Sir, Philip Hammond as Chancellor, at a time of great austerity for public services and large numbers of ordinary people, is apparently expected to commit a further £1 billion to immediate road construction. Mr. Hammond, in a previous role of Secretary of State for Transport, said, 'For every pound we spend on highways agency schemes, on average we will get back £6 of benefits.' I asked the Select Committee on Transport in 2013 to look at this claim. It did not. I have asked the Department for Transport, DfT, over many years, and including a long correspondence via Norman Baker as Transport Minister in the Coalition Government, to come up with evidence that road building is economically beneficial. The Department was unable to come up with one shred of evidence of the truth of Hammond's assertion. Worse still, it became apparent through asking the questions that with all the billions that the DfT has spent on road building and all the countryside it has wrecked and all the health and climate costs of what Mrs. Thatcher called the great car economy, it has never done any research to justify the claim, nor has it researched the externalities of road transport or what would happen to traffic levels and congestion if externalities were recovered from users. I have put the above to our MP, Steve Brine, assuming that he would be willing to be an apologist for the Chancellor's position, and I have challenged him to obtain from the Chancellor or the DfT any research that demonstrates that there is a net national benefit in GDP to be had from expenditure on road building in the UK. I will report back on anything that is forthcoming. And that was from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And this one is headed Grab Opportunity, and it's written by Councillor Eileen Berry. Sir, as we now know, Bar End Sports Complex will hopefully go ahead, and it's worth flagging up what will happen to the River Park Leisure Centre site. Now, there's one thing that must not happen there, and that is development for housing. I am convinced that I and others should make it very plain that there should be a replacement for the whole of Winchester City and District, which should be worthwhile and exciting. We need a venue that can accommodate a large audience. That would mean we could attract ballet, opera, dance, live music, orchestras. We could attract a festival of the musical and performing arts. I can imagine a top restaurant that could use the setting of the river plus an outdoor area for performances, or indeed use the river to its best advantage, where people can bring their own picnics and wine. We should ensure that this is a living project. By that, I mean the restaurant would have to be open regardless of what is happening in the theatre, and we should have a space within the theatre for exhibiting artwork and introducing artists. We know the Theatre Royal is a wonderful asset, but it will never be able to go further than 400 people. The Discovery Centre is inundated with people wanting to exhibit and who cannot be accommodated. Plus, the advantage we could have at River Park is parking. Unobtrusive and controlled parking, whereas both the Theatre Royal and Discovery Centre suffer because of the parking arrangements. We should work closely with the Theatre Royal, with all their expertise, and not be frightened to go forward. It could be wonderful. Councillor Eileen Berry, Prizedean Road, Hairstock.
Emily Siver says, Bike Tales Wanted. Sir, award-winning documentary company Testimony Films are making a new documentary for BBC Four celebrating the history of the Rally Bicycle Company and the bicycles that revolutionised cycling in Britain. We are looking for interesting stories throughout the decades from the people who enjoyed rally bicycles. We would love to hear from the oldest people in Britain who have had or still own a rally bike. Were you born in the interwar period and can talk about cycling in the 1920s and 1930s? Do you have fond memories of a rally bike and the freedom it offered you, or tales of adventures on two wheels? If cycling has had or still has an impact on your life or that of someone you know, we would love to talk to you. Please get in touch. 01179 258 589. That's 01179 258-589, or emily.siver@testimonyfilms.com. Emily Siver, 12 Great George Street, Bristol, BS1 5RH.
And Eric Horn writes, Money Wasted. Sir, the Winchester Farmers Market on Sunday, November the 13th, showed signs of recovery to its original largest in the country when it occupied the central car park. But it will never be the same until it returns there, if it ever does. It will be interesting to see what happens when the remains of the multi-storey reopens. On the basis of past experience, probably nothing except more cars. The market should at least return to the Middle Brook Street space adjacent to the Brooks, where it was at the beginning. Why isn't it? There are stalls in that area during the week, and some retail is returning. What's different about Sunday? We got partway there on Remembrance Sunday. Middlebrook Street was traffic-free bliss, and some of the farmers' stalls were there instead. But the rest of the space, empty. Why does the park and ride not operate at weekends when it is most needed? Of course, our council will say there is no money for this. Just think how many Sunday P&R services could have been provided with all that money wasted on Silver Hill and Station Approach, and all the consultants which have been paid to do the work council officers used to do. I find it extraordinary. It seems that the more the population of Winchester grows, the less money the council appears to have. Perhaps someone out there could explain. And that was from Eric Horn of Sussex Street, Winchester.
And this one is from Mike Biden, headed Just Calm Down. Sir, your correspondents, Tim Major and James Anderson, respond, Chronicle, November 10th, to my letter, October 27th, by attacking me. I'm glad not to be a judge. Like the tabloid press, they need to calm down. The Leavers won the referendum and are now the government. It's not unreasonable to expect a plan. They won by making statements that were not true and giving promises that many see as contradictory and impossible to deliver. Perhaps they fear we were right. The government's delay is worrying. Attacking the judiciary or those with loved ones whose lives are on hold will not help us reunite. We should be treated and heard with a little more respect. For their information, Biden is a Hampshire name dating back to 1066. By the mid-19th century, mine were Cooper's in West Meon, and a great-great-uncle lived in Cannon Street. My mother and my wife's families can also trace their English roots back centuries. Over the past year, my son, like Nigel Farage, MEP, has had the sterling equivalent of a 20% pay rise due entirely to the pound's collapse in value. It makes it much harder to come home. Finally, my international travels began in the 1960s, so I know there is a life for the UK outside the EU. I well remember the 1970s and their economic woes. How long before we are back in the clutches of the IMF? Mike Biden, Northbrook Cross, Winchester.
David Selby writes about planning for city. Sir, although I purchase your newspaper on a weekly basis, I have not been made aware of the overall philosophy behind possible developments in Winchester, such as the station approach in Silver Hill. For instance, what is the City Council's aim with regard to future development? Do we want a city centre that is dominated by an increase in commercial retail outlets and substantial office blocks? Would we prefer a city centre that has more life in it with more residential properties and more hotel accommodation? From recent statements by councillors, it would appear that the preference might be for office and building accommodation to be placed on the soon-to-be-abandoned Sir John Moore Barracks site. Would this be part of an overall plan for the city, or is it just taking advantage of a recently revealed opportunity? The attraction of a lot of European towns and cities is that much of their centres have been lovingly restored despite large-scale destruction over 70 years ago. We in Britain seem to delight in destroying our own environment in the cause of development and so-called modernisation. Basingstoke is a wonderful example of rampant concrete and high-rise structures. And where exactly is its centre now? With more people working from home and an increasing number buying online thanks to the computer age, do we need more retail outlets in the city or office blocks too? Is it not better for people to live in the city and work on the periphery than live on the outskirts and create congestion and pollution coming into the city? Dare one ask, what then is the philosophy for transport in the second half of the 21st century? Planning regulations seem to have more to do with pure functionality than aesthetics or philosophy, and this seems to enable developers to build what they want, whether it serves the population well or is pleasing to the eye. Planners should remember that huge office block in London, Centre Point, is now converting into residential accommodation. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
And another planning letter from Stuart Keir. Tell us your plans. Sir, as the city car parks are now closed or built upon and significant volumes of housing arrive, Would our politicians care to advise the electorate as to how they propose we access and or travel into our city? There seem to have been a couple of notable democratic slip-ups recently, and if we are more informed of their proposals and vision, then we can't possibly get it wrong at any future council or national election. And that is from Stuart Keir, Courtney Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
This one is headed Unfair Charges and is written by Edward Chase. Sir, the High Court has just ruled illegal the government's approach on no pollutants. This means Winchester needs to work even harder, particularly against diesel vehicles entering the city. May I therefore repeat my assertion, made in a letter in January, that the city needs to better incentivise parking for electric and other ultra-low emission vehicles. That's ULEV. The traders don't want the car parking spaces to be cut, so incentivising low pollution cars and lorries is the best way to proceed to keep footfall up. It's staggering that I could bring my horribly polluting ancient diesel van, now sold, into the city or the electric car and be treated just the same by the authorities. Yet the van gave out over 1,000 times the pollution, was noisier and took up more road space. Leeds is giving free parking to ULEV, so why can't Winchester? Their scheme operates similarly to disabled badges, except it is linked to the car and not the person, so it's easy to administer and police. It only applies to residents of the city. Winchester's similar scheme for season ticket holders is no use to me, as I'm not a daily parker. And that was from Edward Chase, MA, Slow Lane, Mitchell-Dever.
Councillor Peter Edgar writes about children's awards. Sir, as the Hampshire County Council lead member for education, an important part of my role is to attend a number of schools' events every week. One special occasion that always seems to pass without any recognition is the County Council Children in Care Awards that took place recently. This is where we recognise and celebrate the educational achievements of the young people in our schools that are in our care. Given the challenging personal circumstances of these young people, I feel they should be especially congratulated on their awards at both primary and secondary level. It was an extremely happy event and involved their participation in workshops in music, drama, art and creative writing. They heard a fantastically motivational speech about the importance of reading and writing from the celebrated children's author Ali Sparks. And we were all particularly impressed with the young people's enthusiastic participation in the ukulele workshop. The event was held at the University of Winchester, with whom the County Council works in close partnership. Student ambassadors from the university participated fully with the organisation, supporting the shared message of high aspiration and achievement for all. It was also encouraging to witness how well the social workers know their children. This truly special event really demonstrated the dedication that county officers have to the children in our care and how that shows the great things that young people can achieve when well supported, even if their lives had a difficult start. By going the extra mile for children in care, Hampshire County Council is boosting their educational attainment and therefore their future opportunities in the world of work. I was very pleased to see this in action and to see the response of the young people themselves, enjoying opportunities to show their creativity and take pride in their achievements at this incredibly enjoyable event for all present. A huge well done to all involved. Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, Hampshire County Council.
And Councillor Stephen Godfrey writes, apologise to Prof. Sir, your columnist, Joanna Lewis, Chronicle, November the 10th, repeats the words of Councillor Gottlieb in suggesting that Professor Martin Biddle has been persuaded to give particular professional advice to the City Council regarding archaeology in Winchester. She should withdraw those remarks and apologise. Unlike Ms. Lewis, Professor Biddle is a distinguished professional archaeologist with an international reputation and unparalleled local knowledge. The notion that he could be persuaded to give anything other than his own independent view is patently wrong. Ms. Lewis, like Councillor Gottlieb, stridently rejects any opinion or advice which differs from her own views. Such an arrogant and careless approach is not one that the Council will follow. We are producing a supplementary planning document which will set out the features and form of much of the needed regeneration of the town centre. Unlike Ms. Lewis, we start with an open mind and listen carefully to expert advice rather than rejecting it out of hand. And that was from Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader, Winchester City Council.
This one from Valerie Roberts and headed Learning Curve. Sir, having had a puncture in my car tyre on the M27 just before Hedge End, I managed to drive my car very slowly to the Cane's Hill roundabout near Southampton and into a side road last Wednesday. Having to wait some 4 hours for breakdown service with problems finding my knocking nut, I would like to say a big thank you to a very kind lady called Kerry, who not only stopped in the dark to ask if she could help me, but went away and came back with a cup of tea. Also to the breakdown vehicle driver, who came to my aid, and to the low loader driver, who was able to take me to the Audi garage in Chandler's Ford, where my car was attended to. A learning curve to all lady drivers. Know where your locking nut is kept in your car. And that was from Valerie Roberts, Hazley Road, Twyford.
Peter Shepherd writes about street litter. Sir, I'm now an infrequent visitor to my hometown of Winchester. I was appalled and sickened on a quick visit last Saturday to find that part of the high street was crammed with stalls selling food and mostly very tatty trinkets. It was almost impossible to pass down one side of the high street because of the stalls and the litter that they had created. One waste bin near Marks and Spencer's was overflowing with food waste, which was all over the pavement. This is not an attractive feature and must surely be a deterrent to many visitors to this beautiful city. One further observation was the lack of proper lighting in the Middle Brook Street open-air car park, and in particular at the pay station, where the lack of any lighting made it very difficult to see what one was doing. The city fathers should get their act together. Peter Shepherd, Tilehurst, Reading.
And Robert Fowler writes, cites anything but uncontroversial. Sir, the article on the refused planning application on land next to Alsford Recreation Centre, Chronicle, November the 17th, contained reported remarks that are proven to be a travesty of the truth. It was claimed by Winchester City Council that this area of only 2.4 hectares, which is adjacent to the town centre, was in the countryside. This is disingenuous as it lies less than 150 metres from the town centre, when it is known that the settlement border was recently drawn by the planners to exclude it. At the same time, a huge field at Sun Hill, 900 metres from the town centre, which is farmland and genuinely in the countryside, has been included inside the town boundary after the planners moved it towards Bishop Sutton. A quote saying that the site at Sun Hill is uncontroversial is patently untrue. More objections to this site were received by Winchester County Council than all others for the local plan. So much for democracy. And that was from Robert Fowler of Sunhill Crescent, Alsford, and is accompanied by an artist's impression of the Alfred Holmes plans for Albury Park in Alsford, with a selection of houses, very varied, with some grey roofs, some red roofs, all quite tall and with gardens around them.
And this one, and it's headed A Superb Show, is from Linda Kay. Sir, we were privileged to attend a superb performance of the musical Billy Elliot at Henry Beaufort School on Thursday evening. We were astounded by the professionalism of the young students. The singing, dancing and acting were first class. Our hearty congratulations to the drama department and the students for pulling off a cracking musical. The headmaster has every right to be proud of his staff and students and their great achievement. Linda Kay, Goring Field, take down Winchester.
And that was the last of our letters to the editor. Thank you to all of the contributors. And now it's time for your say. Former Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg has called for cannabis to be legalised. We asked readers in the Winchester area if they agreed with him. Noel has the answers.
Yes, I have four answers. Lisa Lockyer, 44, market trader who runs the Winchester Soap Company store from South Wanston, said, "If it's for medicinal use, I agree. But for other uses like pleasure and social purposes, I do not agree. It has to be carefully done." And Alex Brown, 37, record shop owner of Chawton Close, Winchester, said, "I think it should be legalised. It has a lot of medical benefits and is good for all sorts of conditions." And Ryan Davis, 19, landscaper of Taplings Road Week, said, "They do it either way. I do not think it will make a real difference." And Barbara Raymond, 50, taxi driver of Waverway Stanmore, who by coincidence was a victim in that story about car raids in the headline story, she said, "I think it would be available, but only for medicinal purposes and on prescriptions, but for other purposes, no."
Now we're going back to the mists of time for historical news items, which we've got from our dusty old files. That's 25 years ago, read by Jane.
25 years ago was November the 22nd, 1991. Firstly, musical fireworks. "Sir, may I, through your columns, voice a complaint about the grand bonfire and fireworks event, 2nd of November 1991, at Oram's Arbour? As was reported in the Chronicle, visually the best so far. My complaint is not about the fireworks themselves, but the loud, pervasive muzak blasting away throughout the fireworks display, which drowned the snap and crackle of the fire and swooshing of the rockets and other aerial fireworks. Neither could I really hear the oohs and ahs of my fellow pyromaniacs. The 30 to 50 people around me all agree the display would have been greatly improved if the muzak had been suspended and the natural noises of this special event given preference over artificial sounds." And the second little article is "No right to speak." The idea of the public being given the right to speak at deputations to Hampshire County meetings was rejected by the Procedures Subcommittee on Monday. Mr. Fred Emery Wallace, council leader, commented, "There is nothing more unfair to the people of Hampshire than to have deputations. How do you deal with the business of the council when you limit it and say, we will have the first three quarters of an hour for deputations?" Mr. Mike Hancock had proposed that deputations be allowed to address the council meetings. After voting 5-3 against having deputations, members agreed time limits on members speaking.
Let's go back 50 years ago now, please, Shirley.
Right. This was from November the 26th, 1966, headed, "Nothing Changes." Rail commuters who, over the past year, have endured the delays and frustrations of the electrification works on the main line between London and Bournemouth are at last seeing some reward for all their suffering. A new electronic signal box opened at Basingstoke on Sunday, joined with a similar type at Eastleigh, and from then onwards controlled the whole of the track between Woking and St. Denis. But the appeal to the public will not be complete until a great deal more is done to the stations themselves. Catering facilities cry out for improvement, and there is a desperate need of waiting rooms that are light, well ventilated and warm. And then the second part of this is headed, "Noisy Rail Bells." British Railways are taking steps to prevent annoyance to local residents from level crossing bells and whistles from approaching trains. Hampshire County Roads and Bridges Committee heard that, in reply to their inquiry about the noise caused at crossings, that the British Railways Board would arrange for the automatic level crossings warning bells to be muted, and also that the trains would not sound their whistles during the silent hours, 11:30 p.m. until 7 a.m.
Noel's going to take us back 100 years ago now.
Two stories from November the 25th, 1916. First one is headlined, Warship Sunk. The Secretary of the Admiralty on Wednesday issued the following announcement. British hospital ship Britannic was sunk by mine or torpedo yesterday morning, 21st, in the Zier Channel in the Aegean Sea. There are 1,106 survivors, 28 of whom are injured, and it is estimated that about 50 are lost. Athens, November the 21st. According to the latest information received, the Britannic lowered all her boats, numbering 35, and every effort was made to save the sick and wounded, who are said to have numbered upwards of 1,000. The Britannic was apparently coming from Salonika. And the second story is horse sales banned. So, all lovers of horses are rejoiced that, largely owing to the representations of the RSPCA, the government have agreed to prohibit the sale of cast army horses in Egypt, Salonika and the East, and that the same order has been given with regard to cast British army horses in France, save in regard to mares for breeding purposes. However, we must not forget that many of the cast army horses were bought abroad and sent through this country to France, and have never been near the firing line, having been cast due to their being gun-shy or gibbers. Some of these are in perfectly sound condition, and when horses are so much needed for agricultural purposes, it seems a pity that their services should not be utilised.
And finally, let's go back 200 years with Jane.
200 years ago was November the 25th, 1816. The first little item, terrible disease. A French paper states that the use of vitiated rye has produced a singular disease, causing cruel ravages in the district of Beaurepaire, department of the Isère. It acts with great rapidity on the strongest men, producing gangrene in all the limbs, which it detaches from the joints in a manner so horrible that unfortunate creatures have been seen to live for some weeks in the greatest agonies, with only the trunk remaining. In the disease, emetics have been prescribed, followed by antispasmodics and especially strong doses of opium, the sedative virtues of which have been very useful. And secondly, payday moved. A correspondent has suggested a regulation which, though it may at first sight appear trifling, is in reality of considerable practical importance. And this is nothing more than to pay the wages of husbandmen and workmen of every description on Fridays instead of Saturdays. Hence, their wives have the opportunity of laying out their mites to the best advantage on the day following, instead of being forced to deal at a late hour and perhaps at the dearest shops for the supplies of the following week. Above all, the destructive practices of pay tables at public houses on Saturday nights ought to be absolutely prohibited by law.
Let's get back to the present now, because Shirley's going to read an alternative look at the news, and it's Balgarham Diary.
Right, well, this one is headed Rescuing Furry Friends. It probably wasn't in the job description. Winchester City Council housing teams are used to variety in their work, from letting homes, collecting rent, dealing with antisocial behaviour and repairing properties to helping the homeless. The latest challenge was the urgent rehoming of Albert and Daisy, two guinea pigs left in a property when their owner was taken to hospital. The furry tenants had been left unattended for some time and were found in a sorry state. Acting on a tip-off, housing staff gained entry and got the animals checked over by a vet and have now arranged for them to be rehomed. Amber Russell, the council's head of housing management, said Albert and Daisy had not been well looked after. Their claws were really long, and they had very swollen feet, with numerous sores. They clearly enjoyed all the attention, though, and are responding well in their new home. On closer examination by a vet, the rodents were found on Tuesday to be both female and have been renamed Tallulah and Blush. The rodents are now starting a new life in Chandler's Ford with Grace Charlton, age 7, whose mum works in the council housing department. And with this, we have a very nice colour picture of these two rodents looking very relieved that they've been rescued.
Our first person this week is by George Hayter, and it's read by Noel.
And it's headlined, The Train Truth About Heathrow. We had a lovely house when I was a child in the 1960s. It was white, quite pretty, and had 5 bedrooms. But there was one thing about that house that some people might find unattractive. It was next to the railway. When a steam train trundled past, the noise made it difficult to hear the television. The racket was particularly bad when the Bournemouth Bell hurtled by on its dash from Waterloo. Expresses like that actually shook our lounge, and the effect was thunderous when a heavy goods train rattled through. But the amazing thing is that we rarely notice trains passing. You do stop noticing something when it happens about every 15 minutes every day. If we were in conversation, we just raised our voices without thinking about it. Rail traffic continued at night. There were fewer trains, but those that did go through were just as fast and loud, yet we never woke up. It was just background noise, and when the house shook, to us it was just background shaking. In Winchester, there are many households close to the tracks. Though modern trains are quieter, these neighbours of the main line surely benefit from the same fortuitous phenomenon. If a noise is routine, you don't notice it. People living by the noisy M3 probably know this too, and people who fall asleep on long car journeys may also recognise the same anaesthetic effect. Of course, when some people are light sleepers and they will always wake when a train passes, just as they will always wake if a cat meows or a rafter creaks. Few sounds can be as routine as the noise from jets on final approach to Heathrow. One goes overhead once every minute or so, so I doubt that people under the flight path notice them. When I lived in Acton in London, occasionally under a Heathrow departure route, I never did. Yet last month's announcement that the government favours a third runway at Heathrow has been greeted by Boris and other objectors who think the extra noise would be intolerable for Londoners. But regular passing planes are no worse than passing trains. With modern engine technology, jets make more of a whoosh than a roar. Even houses very close to Heathrow touchdown can rarely be shaken as our house was. Okay, there are some valid arguments against the third runway. By encouraging flights, it would increase global warming. Part of the village of Harmondsworth would be destroyed, and local air quality would be less healthy than otherwise because of additional road traffic and flights. But the economic case for a third runway is overriding. UK firms trying to export are being held back by lack of flights for foreign customers. Unemployed UK workers are thwarted by a lack of air routes, discouraging foreign firms choosing Britain for new investment. Without a new runway, it will be harder for UK firms, including from Hampshire, to do business with the rest of the world. We're lucky to be just down the M3 from one of the world's most successful air hubs, but we could do with more spokes. Opponents say we have to forego the economic benefits of more airport capacity in order to protect the environment, but that argument is flawed. We need the stronger economy that a new runway will bring in order to pay for environmental measures such as faster replacement of fossil fuel electricity generation with wind power. Replacing smoky power stations with windmills would compensate for pollution from a third runway. Objectors say pollution from a bigger Heathrow would harm the health of local people, but UK economic expansion brought by a third runway would give us the cash to pay for more NHS resources for everyone, including Heathrow residents. A third runway could bring cleaner air, better health, and no increase in noticeable noise.
Over to Jane for the editorial comment.
The editorial comment this week is showing goodwill to a city centre throng. So, Winchester's annual self-congratulation, even self-glorification as the Christmas capital of England, has begun for another year. The festive lights have been switched on, the first skates have slid across the ice, and the first present bought at the market in the cathedral close. It would be churlish not to generally welcome this development, which has evolved over the last 10 years, not least for saving the cathedral from financial disaster. There is undoubtedly a buzz about the place. Winchester is now a destination on the short break and day trip circuit, attracting thousands of visitors to the city. A more enticing attraction than traipsing around a windswept Stonehenge, for example. But there are warning bells. Many people take the view that the city centre is best avoided once the Christmas crowds arrive, with the high street crammed with stalls and the car parks full. The festive bedlam adds weight to the view that somehow the city is failing. Letters published today again make that point. The Chronicle disagrees with that overly negative viewpoint. But the City Council and the Business Improvement District are wise to introduce more mitigating measures this year. That should not be the end of it, however. More ideas are needed to ensure that both visitors and residents are equally happy at this time of year and into 2017.
It's time for What's On. The Cathedral Christmas Market is still on, and it's on until Tuesday, December the 20th. On Saturday, December the 3rd, from 10 to 4, in St. Morris's Covert, next to Debenhams, there's a chance to buy pre-packed baskets ready for gifts. Yes, it's the WI Basket Sale. On Saturday, December the 3rd again, 12 noon to 2 p.m, at St. Mark's Church Hall, Oliver's Battery, there's a Christmas cracker light lunches and various stalls and a raffle. Also on Saturday, December the 3rd, very busy, at 1 p.m. at St. Lawrence Church at the Square in Winchester, there's a celebration of Christmas in song. It's in aid of Night Shelter. Ticket reservations are £8, including lunchtime refreshments available on the door. That is the ticket available on the door, not the lunchtime refreshments. And on Saturday, December the 10th, at 3 p.m. in the City Mill on Bridge Street, Christmas carols with the Alder Valley Brass Band. And it's free. For more information, 01962 870057. That's 01962 870057. Lighting up time ends Friday the 25th of November at 7:38 a.m. and it begins at 4:07 p.m. And on Wednesday the 30th of November, it ends at 7:46 a.m. and begins at 4:02 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and who would like to receive our recordings, or if you've got a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. We're now going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Shirley.
Right, and this article is headed, "We've All Gone Spotty to Raise Pudsey Funds." It's one of the biggest fundraising days of the year. Across Hampshire, a variety of activities and challenges took place for BBC Children in Need. Their hard work will help disadvantaged children across the UK. In Winchester, staff at Boots in the High Street donned their best Pudsey and animal fancy dress for the cause, which raised a record amount nationwide. In the colder environment, outdoors, Winchester High Street's well-known big SU seller, who only likes to give his name as Kev, was found dressed up as Pudsey, raising money for the cause with a bucket. Supporting him was Four Marks-based singer Dean Dyson, providing musical and moral support to keep Kev's spirits up throughout the day. But across the county, there were all sorts of exciting events happening. Solent Lloyd's Banking Group were busy with their Ready Teddy Bake competition, where Pudsey Bear awarded colleagues with prizes. Southampton University's Cake Decorating Society did their bit by making a donation to decorate Pudsey Bear-themed cupcakes, and Southampton Liberty Living held a bake sale. Cineworld Southampton held a Harry Potter quiz night for children in need, as well as to celebrate the release of Harry Potter prequel, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. At the Gregg School, children took part in a range of weird and wacky activities. Year 7 tried worm charming, where pupils were sponsored for how many worms they could entice out of their patch of grass. There was also a balloon challenge for Year 8, where pupils had to inflate as many balloons as possible within 1 hour before seeing how fast they could pop them. Year 11 was sponsored to take part in revolting bush tucker trials, just like on hit show I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Meanwhile, pupils at St Swithin's Junior School in Winchester were thrilled when Pudsey played a visit. The children brought in donations for children in need and wore their very own spotty accessories and Pudsey ears to tie in with the big spectacular theme this year. Pudsey spent some time with the youngest children in nursery and reception classes before greeting the entire school and having his photograph taken. Olivia Pickard in Year 6 from Allsford was the winner of a Pudsey Smarty jar after guessing the amount in the jar to within 4 of 429. And with this article, we have 3 very colourful pictures. It shows staff at Winchester Boots store dressed up for children in need. And then we've got Kev, the big issue seller, in the high street with his friend, singer Dean Dyson. He's holding his guitar, so no doubt he's just in the middle of singing something. And then lastly, St Swithin's Junior School children, all sitting on the steps of a very wide staircase leading up to the first floor. Many, many children indeed. And Pudsey Bear standing on one side.
This is the question and answer column. My Winchester, and this week it's Emily Cotterill, 24, a project manager at Winchester BID of Brassy Road, Pullflood, Winchester, shares her favourite things about Winchester. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? I think the Corner House. It's half cafe and half bar as well, and it does really nice food. What's your favourite pub or bar? I think probably the Hyde Tavern in Hyde Street. That's where I go to do my creative writing group. What's your favourite shop? P.G. Wells is absolutely what you would expect and is a traditional bookshop. It's like stepping back into the past. What's your favourite building? The building's up to the Great Hall and the Victorian complex. It shows how important and central Winchester is. What's your favourite view? Driving down Allsford Road, where you can see across the city. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? I think it's King Alfred. He's the focal point of Winchester. What is Winchester's best-kept secret? I think there are lots of quiet places tucked into the high street to go and sit down, and there are pockets of serenity around the city. What's the best thing about Winchester? For the size that it is, it has so much going on. If you put some effort in, you can never get bored. There's always something happening. And the worst? I think sometimes it does not necessarily serve its young population that well. You have to leave Winchester to go shopping if you are under a certain age. And if there's one thing you can change about Winchester, what would it be? I think maybe make some of the people in Winchester more open to change. People are very proud and protective of their heritage often. When people want to do something new, people protest against it for the sake of it. Describe Winchester in a sentence. It is a creative but compact city.
And here we have a letter from Westminster from Steve Brine, the MP. Conventional wisdom would have you believe there is no other story in Westminster these days outside of Brexit. Don't get me wrong, it rightly dominates the House and its committees, so the idea that Parliament is not debating Britain's exit from the EU is one of the silliest political myths of our time. But there's the thing. Members of Parliament can multitask, and there's plenty else going on. One very good example is the Homelessness Reduction Bill, sponsored by my Conservative colleague Bob Blackman, MP. Like constituents who wrote to me, I am supporting Bob's bill, which passed its second reading in the House of Commons last month and returned this week for the detailed scrutiny of committee stage. I'm pleased to say that the bill, unusually for a private member's bill, has government support. The proposed law, backed by campaigners including Crisis and St Mungo's, will change the help available to homeless people right across the country, including here in Winchester. So how will the bill help someone threatened, and this is the key point, with homelessness? Currently, the council would probably say they couldn't do anything to help until the landlord had issued an eviction warrant. In the meantime, tenants are left to search fruitlessly for accommodation. The bill aims to address this by extending the definition of threatened with homelessness from 28 to 56 days. So the council would have a legal duty to help someone 56 days before they became homeless. This means the definition of homelessness is important. The bill changes this definition by explicitly stating that people are to be treated as homeless on the day a valid notice expires. This would mean someone served with a notice seeking possession would be entitled to help just after the notice had been given and long before the bailiffs arrive. While many local authorities are doing their best in difficult circumstances, the law means that in order to qualify for help, homeless people have to fall into certain legal categories that make them a priority. These covers families, pregnant women, the elderly and people with disabilities, and rightly so. Yet unfortunately, large numbers of people fall outside these categories, even if they're sleeping on the street, and often that means they can't get help. This bill, therefore, would introduce a new legal duty on councils, requiring them to prevent and tackle homelessness through a new required help and advice plan, regardless of whether or not they're deemed to be priority need. Aside from ending a long-standing injustice, this will also benefit the public purse, since homeless people are more likely to need public services. Excuse me, sorry. Such as accident and emergency, substance rehabilitation services, or the police. This is a bill for social justice, and while no one is naive enough to think it's a magic wand, it deserves support to create a lasting legacy of which we can be immensely proud. That was from Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford.
Horace, 92, honoured for his part in D-Day. Horace Nicholson, at the age of just 20, was one of the first British soldiers on the beaches of Normandy. On a June day in 1944, he stepped ashore to help liberate France and defeat Nazism. Now, 72 years later and aged 92, he has received the Légion d'Honneur from a grateful French government. The medal was presented in a ceremony at the D-Day Museum in Portsmouth, attended by Horace, his sister Ina, and friends. It was a moving occasion for Horace, who was born and still lives in a house at Hinton Abner, near Oresford, with Ina. His parents lived in the house before him. Horace said of the presentation, "It was very emotional. It brought back a lot of memories of all the lads who didn't survive." Of D-Day itself, he said, "We felt a bit anxious, but it was a thing, it had to be done. Luckily, due to the current, we landed a little off course and we got off the beach without opposition. Then we met the Germans beyond the dunes and our fighting started." He is something of a forgotten hero and only received his campaign medals this year with the help of a neighbour. Aged 18, in 1943, Horace was called up to join the Dorset Regiment. A year later, as a trained rifleman, he journeyed via Algiers and Tunis to join the 1st Battalion, who had just taken part in the successful invasion of Sicily. Shortly after, he then made his first seaborne landing, the invasion of Italy. He vividly remembers landing at 11 a.m., coinciding with the surrender by Italy, so the Italians were happy their war was over and the German forces were few and far between. But war is cruel, and a scheduled airstrike that was not only running late but somehow hadn't been cancelled bombed the Dorset's position, and the wireless truck and the 405 operators were killed. The Dorsets were recalled to Britain in preparation for the liberation of Europe. They were to be a spearhead battalion on D-Day onto Gold Beach in Normandy. Horace embarked in Southampton along with thousands of others on Saturday evening. His troopship anchored in Stoat Bay before joining the Armada across the Channel. Reveille was sounded at 1 a.m. for breakfast. Then, at first light, 12 miles offshore, Horace clambered down the scrambling nets into the landing craft. Even going flat out, the run into the beach seemed a long time for all 30 men aboard. When asked if he was frightened, he replied, "We were all frightened, but I was lucky. Our young coxswain wasn't as frightened as other coxswains in charge, some of the other landing craft. And he put us straight up the beach. I didn't even get my boots wet." Indeed, the Dorsets were lucky, as the tidal current meant they landed a little way from their intended area at La Hamo. And Horace remembers running up the beach and over the dunes without enemy opposition. On advancing further, they met their first of many enemy encounters. They stormed a battery of enemy artillery, which by then had run out of ammunition, and they found the gun crews gone. On to Villers-Bocage. For a rifleman, it was one small field and hedge at a time, fighting through the country of Normandy. Small fields with dense, high hedge banks, perfect for defence. Day by day, Horace remembers crawling through unharvested cornfields to outflank an enemy position. Eventually, the Allies broke out, and he witnessed the closing at the Falaise Gap as the desperately retreating German army was strafed by RAF Typhoons and Spitfires. He recalls the aftermath as not a pretty sight. Following the breakout, his battalion was in the headlong rush across northern France to Holland and became part of 30 Corps, the land element of Operation Market Garden. But they didn't make it to Arnhem in time. The Dorsets then held that frontline area of ground between Nieuwenden Bridge and Arnhem. By then, after having suffered considerable casualties, the first Dorsets were withdrawn and repatriated. Not for Horace, though. He transferred to the 5th Battalion for the crossing of the Rhine. 5 days later, he was injured in the hand by shrapnel, and blood poisoning set in, so he was flown by Dakota to hospital in France and was there when the war ended. But there were prisoners and ammunition to be guarded in Germany and Italy, and he didn't finally come home until May 1947. And with the article, we've got some rather nice colour pictures. One fairly close-up showing Horace and his sister Ina looking very pleased. And also there's a picture of Horace when he was much younger during the army in World War II.
Woman fell to her death downstairs. A former Winchester woman who fell down a flight of stairs to her death had a poisonous level of alcohol in her system, an inquest heard. Lisa Clash, 46, died of injuries to her head and impact damage to her liver after falling down the stairs of her boyfriend's first floor maisonette in Andover on July the 3rd. An inquest in Winchester heard the mother of one was 4.5 times the drink and drive limit when she died. Senior Coroner Graham Short heard Ms. Clash, who had lived in Hairstock while serving in the army, suffered a continuous battle with alcoholism and had relapsed weeks before her death. The former army personal trainer and keen triathlete had been working with substance abuse service Inclusion. However, Ms. Clash began drinking again in June. Around the same time, she met new boyfriend Kevin Edwards, also a former Inclusion client. The pair had been drinking with Mr. Edwards' brother, Martin, that night. He told the inquest the pair seemed happy and had been kissing and holding hands. Kevin Edwards went to bed at around 9 p.m, leaving Ms. Clash cooking in his kitchen. He woke up around midnight to get a glass of water, but said he did not see Ms. Clash, who would often leave and walk home to Quicksilver Way. Mr. Edwards awoke at around 8 a.m. the following day to find the body of Ms. Clash lying in a pool of blood by the front door. Police attended and carried out a thorough forensic investigation. DC Catherine Bird told the inquest Mr. Edwards was treated as a significant witness but was never arrested. She said Mr. Edwards was in a state of visible shock and cooperated fully. Forensic pathologist Russell Delaney also gave evidence at the hearing. He revealed that Ms. Clash had 375 milligrams of alcohol per 100 millilitres of her blood at the time of her death. Dr. Delaney said that the considerable level of alcohol in her blood could cause alcohol poisoning in an average drinker. Senior coroner Graham Short recorded a verdict of accidental death. He said it is unclear what happened. What we do know is that Lisa had had a considerable amount of alcohol. She had so much that people who don't normally drink would probably have died of alcohol poisoning. He added, "We can't rule out absolutely the possibility that the third party had pushed Lisa, but we know from Dr. Delaney that there were no signs of injury to her back or other injuries that cannot be explained. There is no positive evidence of Lisa being pushed." He concluded, "Therefore, I think on the balance of probability that she tripped or stumbled as she was going down the stairs. I'll record this as an accidental death."
And here we have latest arrival at Marwell Zoo is proving a real pig-me-up. He is the latest arrival at Marwell Zoo and he is now waiting for a name. The pygmy hippo calf was born on November the 2nd at the zoo, and he is a true rarity since there hasn't been a male hippo born there for the last decade. His breed is originally native to the rainforest of West Africa, and due to deforestation and logging, has lost its natural habitat. Now the little hippo will be part of the European Endangered Species Breeding Programme, and a competition has been launched to give him a name. Claire Mound, team leader for primates and small mammals, said, "We are really excited to confirm this new arrival is male. He has quickly learned how to use his feet and is already jumping around." The staff at the zoo have already listed 4 names for him, and the public can now vote online to choose between Derek, George, Walter, or Norbert. A female of the same breed called Gloria was born at Marwell in 2013 and is now starting her own family at Edinburgh Zoo, while the newborn is enjoying the care of his mum Wendy and his dad Oliver at the zoo near Coldon Common. Over the following few weeks, we will continue to monitor the new arrival and start to introduce him to the rest of his enclosure and regular practice in the pool, Claire said. All he needs now is a name. The competition to pick one will close on November the 29th, and those who vote can also get a chance to win a family ticket to Marwell Zoo, as they will automatically be entered into the draw. To vote, visit www.marwell.org.uk or the Marwell Wildlife Facebook page for more pictures and updates. And this is accompanied by a delightful picture of the pygmy hippo looking very muddy and sloshing about to his pleasure in some very muddy water with a little baby having a little feed underneath. And those names were Derek, George, Walter or Norbert?
Raising a glass to wine-tasting event. It is the eagerly anticipated chance for lovers of the grape to sample a feast of fabulous wines. Winchester is once again preparing to host its annual wine festival, a two-day celebration which starts at the city's Guildhall tomorrow. This year's event is supported charity run by Hampshire actress Sarah Parrish and her husband, James Murray. The couple have launched the Murray Parrish Trust in memory of their late daughter, Ella Jane, who died from a congenital heart defect. They have so far raised more than £300,000 for Southampton General Hospital's paediatric intensive care unit, where Ella Jane spent half of her short life. A message on their website says, "There is only one way to numb the pain of losing a child, and that is to help other children." Visitors to this year's festival will be able to sample more than 300 wines from Hampshire and around the world. The event is being hosted by Peter and Susie Richards, who are probably best known for their regular wine slots on the BBC TV show Saturday Kitchen. Tickets cost £30 per person, which includes unlimited tasting, a free wine glass and festival bag, and access to exclusive discounts. A colour-coded system called Follow Your Taste aims to ensure that people are pointed in the direction of wines they will enjoy the most. A festival spokesman said, "The event is a chance for everyone, no matter how much or little they know, to enjoy a feast of fabulous wines in the company of Susie and Peter. They are based in Winchester, but work internationally, speaking and writing about the wonderful world of wine. Wine Festival Winchester is the realisation of their dream to launch their own fun event with a local focus where people can make new wine discoveries in a relaxed and enjoyable atmosphere. Susie and Peter will be on hand to help recommend wines. This year, we are very proud to be working with the Murray Parish Trust as our charity partner. We will be running a prize draw at the event, with all the proceeds going to the charity. We'll have wonderful prizes, so please bring some extra cash to support a great cause."
Residents hitting out at Parking Plan. A Winchester council estate could get a £150,000 revamp, but parking plans for the area are being resisted by residents. Winchester City Council is aiming to give Trussell Crescent in Week a new lease of life, with work including parking, fencing, garden work, lighting and decoration set to be included in its estate improvement capital programme. However, despite these improvements, concerns have been expressed regarding parking proposals. The council aims to introduce a parking improvement scheme which will see 17 additional spaces included along the access road behind Trussell Crescent, which will be a parking enforcement zone. The plans were met with anger from nearby residents, with a petition signed by 42 people from 29 households. It states the council should reject 8 parking bays on either side of Trussell Close and instead provide additional parking to the front of Trussell Crescent. It adds the council should provide landscape planting to lessen the impact of extra traffic. The council say that putting parking at the front of the Crescent would cost at least £63,000 and make any parking unaffordable. Winchester's cabinet was discussing the plans as the Chronicle went to press.
And here we have security concerns at proposed cafe. A project for a cafe at a beauty spot has suffered a setback as councillors raised various concerns, writes Michael Carr. Plans for the Handlebar Cafe on the Viaduct Way between Garnier Road and St Catherine's Hill were approved by the South Downs National Park Authority. However, the project created by youngsters requires funding from Winchester Town Forum. co-director of Spud Group, Mark Drury, outlined the proposals to the forum. He said he hopes the cafe will be built by August 2017 with a total cost of £334,719. He was pitching for £50,000 from the City Council and £25,000 from the Forum. Mr Drury said, "It is a huge amount of money, but given the nature of what we are trying to provide, it is a very reasonable sum. And given we are a charity, we're trying to get those costs down and make savings without affecting the overall quality. The project ticks so many boxes. It is out of the city, it is in a new cycling route, it links with the park and ride, and cycling is really growing in Winchester. But it is not just about cycling, it's about all sorts of user groups. The cafe would be run by Bespoke Biking, which will provide bike repairs, riding events, as well as a place where people can enjoy a coffee overlooking one of Winchester's more scenic areas. Councillors on the forum, however, highlighted concerns about parking, security, but backed the idea. They did raise fears of what will happen if the cafe is not a success, although councillors who spoke liked the proposal. Councillor Eileen Berry said, "The reason you are doing this for cyclists is wonderful, but you do need to make a profit and it could fall down easily." This is accompanied by an image of the cafe along the walk with lots of cyclists and walkers enjoying themselves at it.
Help for the elderly in winter. A campaign to help older and vulnerable people survive the tough winter months has begun. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Foundation, HIWCF, has launched its Surviving Winter 2016-17 campaign, calling for people to donate their winter fuel payment. All funds raised are recycled directly to those most in need of help to ensure they can afford to stay warm, eat well, and remain mobile. The funds will also provide practical help, including attending appointments, shopping, and maintaining an active social life. Chief Executive of HIWCF, Jakes Ferguson, said, "This coming winter is going to be colder than usual, so it is crucial that we provide the most vulnerable people with the means to survive wintertime with dignity. Donations of winter fuel payments from the more fortunate members of our community can ensure that those most in need are able to keep warm and well. To donate, send a cheque to Dame Mary Fagan House, Lutyens Close, Basingstoke, RG248AG.
Christmas, skate on for fun. The Christmas capital of the South is now in full festive swing. Hundreds of people descended on Winchester to see the opening of the Christmas market and the Winchester Cathedral ice rink. The ice rink, which is in its 10th year, has undergone a special makeover as it will have a clear span roof, meaning families can enjoy a rain-free skate. Hundreds of people warmed up with mulled wine and other festive delights and braved the cold to see the official opening, which included a skating display and a welcome from the acting Dean of Winchester Cathedral, Canon Roland Ream, who also blessed the market. The boy choristers continued, adding to the Christmas spirit by leading carols before the market and ice rink were formally opened by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter. A spokesman for Winchester Cathedral said, "After almost a year of planning, we are delighted to be able to be opening the market and the ice rink in our 10th anniversary. We are looking forward to welcoming thousands of visitors and skaters over the period of the market." The spokesman added they expect the market and ice rink to attract around 350,000 visitors to Winchester in the Christmas period. The opening also comes a day after Winchester's festive lights were switched on. And the Christmas market will be closing on December the 20th and the ice rink shutting on January the 2nd. And there is a lovely picture of the Winchester choristers all in their purple robes not purple robes, it's, I don't know what it's called, it's a dark red of some sort, takes to the ice at this year's Christmas ice rink, and they're all joined up and they're skating in a circle. And there's one wonderful picture of a red-headed boy in his, again, his dark red robes, I don't know what the colour's called, on his skates with a great big grin on his face. And then there's a picture of a man with a little child on his shoulders, also looking spellbound by the whole thing.
Great, and that's a good one to finish on. Yes, I'm afraid that we've come to the appropriate point in the recording to finish for the extracts for the week ending 25th of November 2016. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation team. And of course, thanks to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye, and apologies for the bad throat today.
And from me, Roy Faithful, and apologies for my bad throat too. Thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.